Well, welcome everyone to our week two of Better Together series. A little insight on that little puzzle making. The sanctuary team, this is really weird. We went on an offsite just to kind of think and pray about sanctuary. And this is going to be really awkward. We found out that we all love puzzles. So every night we would do puzzles together. So we're like, hey, let's make puzzles and do it into our little bumper video. So that's a little family information. Anyways, so we're really excited to be here today, week two. We're, as Brandon said, we're looking at a lot of different key issues that are surfacing in the world and that have really been around for a long time. And today, we're talking about homelessness. And if you see someone who's over the age of 35, it's because we're welcoming anyone to this conversation. And so you're welcome here. Thank you so much for coming. And you'll see in the center screen, text questions to 650-665-9144. If you have any questions, we're going to spend the last 10 minutes of our talk answering the questions that you text in. So please feel free to text a question in that you want one of us to talk about. I'm here with my good friend, Charles Knuckles. And Charles, I've known you for about 4 years, a little over 4 years now. Charles is the director of Rescue and Recovery at City Team San Jose. And when I used to work with middle school ministry, we would bring hundreds of middle schoolers to City Team San Jose, and they were supposed to paint walls, but they would actually paint each other and the floors, and it was awesome. And Charles was so gracious. But you have a couple friends here too, Charles. Do you want to introduce your friends to us and just kind of about tonight, what we're going to talk about?
Sure. So here are my friends. This is Jamal. And Jamal is at City Team currently, and he is experiencing homelessness. As a matter of fact, Jamal once lived in the famous jungle, which was the largest homeless camp in the United States. So, and this is my friend Ewan, and Ewan has experienced homelessness since a very young age. When you think of a kid 16 years old and homeless and living in the woods and how frightful that must be, Ewan has experienced that. So both of them will be on our conversation tonight.
Thanks, Charles. And Jamal and Ewan, we're so thankful that you guys are here with us today. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, Charles, I just want to begin by just asking you, like, how would you define homelessness? And what causes homelessness?
Homelessness is is very clear how to define it. It's a person that has no home, and I can define it easily because I experienced homelessness for a number of years. That's why I have a lot of passion around it. What causes it is varied. It can be anything from poverty, to illness, mental illness, drug addiction, alcoholism. Alcohol is like an accepted drug, you know, but it's the most deadly drug of them all. And people can experience homelessness just from having the allergy to alcohol.
Oh, thank you, Charles. And mm-hmm. Charles and I were talking about just statistics mm-hmm. around homelessness, and I'll read them just on our behalf. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, in their 2016 annual homeless assessment report, on a single night in the United States, 550,000 people experience homelessness. And of that, 68% each night live in emergency shelters, transitional housing programs, or safe havens, and 32% are unsheltered. They don't have a place to live. 60% of them are men, 40% are women, and 48% are white, 39% are African American. And out of all of that, a fifth of the people who are experiencing homelessness are children. And that's a lot. And of that, just in our neighborhood, 1,290 in the Ravenswood District, that's East Menlo Park and East Palo Alto, are classified as homeless. And in fact, California is the largest state for people who are experiencing homelessness. 28% of all of the people in America in California are experiencing homelessness. So it's just staggering numbers, and that is one of the reasons why we're talking about that. And And kind of one of the things that I really want to get to, and we'll get to today, is as Christians, how are we supposed to respond to homelessness? But before we talk about that question, Charles, you love Jesus. I've heard you preach before. You're awesome. I would love for you to explain what Jesus and Scripture has to say, and what are responses to people who are experiencing homelessness or in need.
So Jesus talks about homelessness a lot in the Scripture. He put himself in a position of homelessness when he said that the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And he also teaches us how to approach the homeless situation when he says in Matthew that he teaches us that when he was without clothes, you gave me no clothes. Without food, you didn't feed me. You didn't visit me. And so some of the things he says, you didn't clothe me, you didn't feed me, you didn't visit me. And those are some of the important things that Jesus wanted us to know about homelessness. He never once said, you didn't give me any money.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're currently the director of City Team San Jose of Rescue and Recovery, but you weren't always that. You alluded to a little bit of your journey. I would love to just have you share what your journey was, Charles, that led you up to where you're at right now.
So this is probably the last time you see me here because I was born in 1949. Long, long time ago. Yes, they did have cars. And I was orphaned at birth. And in that time, there was a lot of turmoil for the African-American population of the United States. So my mother died when I was 2 years old from something that she could have been cured of if she was allowed in a hospital, but African-Americans weren't allowed in some hospitals. And the one that was close to her, she wasn't allowed in, and she died. And I grew up in an orphanage and from one foster home to another. And I didn't have a parental figure to teach me different things. I didn't have a masculine figure to show me how to fish or anything like that, and there weren't any places to fish in my neighborhood. It was area called the Badlands in North Philadelphia. And so even though I did well in school, I got caught up in drinking and drugs. And I lost a huge part of my life because of that. Continued to be homeless. After I aged out of the foster care system, I went to the Navy. And when I got into the Navy, that's actually when I got involved with drugs. And it got to the point that I was really old. I had very few teeth. I was about 150 pounds, soaking wet. And one day I was buying drugs, and I got shot in the back of my head. And the kids were laughing that did it just because who I was. And I tried to commit suicide because of that, because I couldn't stop. I didn't have an answer. I didn't know Jesus, and I thought that God was for you people and not me because I wasn't, good enough for God. That was my thoughts. And I ended up at City Team, and when I walked in the door, a guy named Clark Jones hugged me, and that was the first time that a person had touched me in so many years. And he hugged me. It didn't matter what I looked like and what I smelled like. He hugged me. And he whispered in my ear, "We've been waiting for you." And so I stayed at City Team, and I did well. I got a job, and I hired guys from City Team, and I ended up out here as the director out here where my office is right by the door, and I get to hug guys and say, "We've been waiting for you." Wow. So pretty amazing journey. Now that I know that God loves me, I'm empowered to do more. The difference in City Team, which is a Christian organization, which provides recovery and homelessness is that when I went to get my license and I went to school for my license, they told us, don't touch the clients. Don't say anything to the clients that might think that you, you know, have a relationship with them. Well, City Team, we hug people. And we say, we love you. The guys say it to each other, I love you, man, you know. And that's a big difference, and that's the love of Jesus Christ that a lot of secular organizations just are not, just, they're not available to that.
Yeah, and that's great to hear that. We love City Team. City Team is a national and international organization. Internationally, it kind of helps with church planning and evangelism, but here, nationally, it's about homelessness and bringing people not only into better, just better situations and better lives, but sharing the love of Jesus, and you get to do that, and that's really awesome, Charles. And you have two guys, Ewan and Jamal, and you guys are currently in City Team right now.
Yes.
And it'd be great to just it'd be great to as Holy Charles. Yeah, as Charles talked about, just kind of his journey, your journey. You're still in your journey, but I would love to hear about your journey before City Team and what led you to where you're at right now. And I don't. Whoever wants to begin can
go. Ahead,
okay. How's everybody doing? My name's Jamal. Yes, I started using drugs and alcohol at a late age. Actually, I was 34 now. I was 29 years old when I decided to, mess my life up, I could basically say. I had two kids and had a girlfriend. Should have been my wife, but she was my girlfriend. We had a nice apartment and everything like that, and I just decided to go about doing what I wanted to do, which was, smoke marijuana, drink alcohol, come home late. That led up to other drugs as crystal meth. Became a crystal meth smoker. I had a good job. I worked at an environmental company in Sunnyvale. It was a great job I had. And the addiction actually took over my job. I was late. I started using during job hours. I became a person that I really didn't recognize in the mirror. And a few years later, I got incarcerated. I spent several months in jail. And once I got out of jail, I guess I just decided to say, hey, I'm just going to do whatever I want. I don't need to have any more responsibilities. I'm 30, about to be 31 years old. And I'm like, hey, I guess nothing's going to happen for my life now. And so I started using more and more every day. I had an apartment for about another 2 or 3 months after that. I remember just having nothing in my apartment but a TV and a small little couch, and I slept there for a couple weeks. I remember actually being kicked out of my apartment and breaking back into it because I had nowhere else to sleep. Eventually, I started sleeping in my car, and then I had to sell my car for drugs because I needed to smoke drugs. And later on that year, I actually got another job and thought I could, get sober. So I was sober for a little while, but that didn't last too much longer. And I started using again. And then I became homeless because I didn't actually have a place to stay at all. And Charles said, I lived in the place we call the jungle. It's actually a huge encampment in San Jose. I lived there for 2 years. It was a place of solitude. I thought I was safe, but it's a really, really scary place. When I thought about it, as I came out of my addiction and I got help, it was a really dangerous place. It's a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol, a lot of just violence. And be honest with you, I was really scared. I was a scared individual staying there. I remember my mom and my sister and the mother of my kids actually had to go down there to look for me 1 year because my mom had pneumonia and she almost died. And I didn't even know. I remember them going down there and they were looking for me and yelling my name. And I think I just remember being so ashamed that I ducked into one of my tents that I had. Had several tents lined up around there and ducked in there and hid from my mom and my sister and the people who really loved me. They wanted to bring me out of the homelessness that I was in. And I ducked from them and I hid. And it was a very hard situation for me. And later I remember talking to my mom. She was telling me that all the people that down there were asking her why a person like me was down there, because I really, really understood that I didn't want to live like that. I just didn't know how to, you know, get out of there. So,
what was one of, I apologize if you said this, but what was one of the reasons that caused you to just choose drugs and to navigate towards that lifestyle?
I had children, and me and their mother were having a lot of issues. I had a good job. There was a part of me that just wanted to have more. So I did a lot of things that I did when I was younger, which was illegal things, you know, selling the drugs, you know, selling of like hats, clothes, you know, just, we call it hustling. I was just trying to be the ultimate hustler plus have a regular job. It didn't really work out. And, that caused me to be depressed and insecure and just a selfish person. And becoming real selfish, insecure, and having depression, you tend to turn to things that are going to, you know, bring you back to a place where you feel you'll be okay. Drugs and alcohol tend to do that for me.
I got to say, Michael, when Jamal told me about his insecurities, it just blew my mind. A big, strong, handsome guy like this, and he's smart too. He's currently taking two different classes or for two separate careers.
Yeah,
you know, at the same time, and I just couldn't understand how could he be so insecure, you know. But there is a lot to it.
Yeah, thanks, Jamal.
Thanks, Brazil.
Ewan, how about you? What your journey?
All right. My name's Ewan. My journey started out a lot earlier than most. I started in the beginning, I guess I started using drugs when I was about 14 years old. I just became like a bad kid, kind of just did my own thing. And then some things happened between my parents. My mom had an affair and my dad ended up committing suicide. And so about a year after that, me and my mom had started using together, using drugs and stuff. And I went away for the weekend, came back, and she had overdosed and passed away. So her adoptive parents decided to take my sister in, and they didn't want to take me because I look exactly like my dad. They weren't cool with that. So they were just kind of like, all right, kid, well, you're on your own. You got to figure it out. So from the age of 16 years old, I started learning that, you know, I had a lot of feelings inside that I couldn't fix, and I had nowhere to be. And since nobody wanted to claim me, I was like, well, I guess I'm just gonna go do my own thing. So I started traveling. I've hitchhiked all over the place. I've been to like 12 different states. I spent the majority of a year in the woods. I kind of stayed by myself. The most I would ever do is like maybe walk down to the store, grab a few things, and then like go back to my spot. I had like my own little area that I kind of kept to. I remember sweeping it and like keeping it clean like a house and stuff. And then after a while of that, I finally started saying, you know, I'm from the East Coast, so it gets pretty cold, and I had never been to California. So I decided that instead of being homeless in the cold, I was going to come be homeless in California. And like you said earlier, you said there's a lot of homeless people in California. I believe it. Because in Lansing, Michigan, they send ambulances around to collect the dead bodies from all the people that freeze to death out in the streets of during the wintertime. You get to be like negative 17 degrees, and if you don't have anywhere to sleep, you're going to freeze to death. So after staying at the Volunteers of America shelter in Lansing, Michigan for probably about a month. I was working under the table trying to move furniture for a company. I got enough money to get a Greyhound bus ticket, And I said, I'm going to California. So I rode the Greyhound bus for about 3 days. And they lost all my luggage on the Greyhound. They lost it in Denver, Colorado. I ended up with a bag full of tent poles and a little bit of clothing that I had had. They lost my tent and my food and my money. So so I arrive in Santa Cruz, California at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I got all excited and I was like, all right, I'm going to go to the beach because I'm going to live on the beach from now on. And I get to the beach and everyone told me that, you know, there's these hippie girls that are going to feed me and it's going to be super cool. It's going to be this awesome place. And I get there and there's just like pop tents, people like waking up from laying on the sand. I'm like, oh no, somebody lied to me. So after that, I decided that I needed to kind of try to find a place to stay. Up on West Cliff, there's a Catholic church up there, the Oblates of St. Joseph. And one of the deacons, or I'm not sure what his technical like position is called, but he's actually was in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a recovering addict. So when I came to him and asked permission, hey, man, is it okay if I like camp under the awning tonight because I got nowhere to go? He said, yeah, that's fine. They brought me food and everything was good. Until I started to run out and became an inconvenience because I was homeless, running around, you know, their area. It's a church. I mean, it's not a campsite. So they kind of got to the point where I needed to find some help. So I had a cell phone at the time that I had paid for an entire year from moving furniture. And I called like 20 different churches and nobody could help me out. And I finally called up the last church I had pretty much had. I was at my wit's end. And it goes right to the pastor's cell phone. And the First United Pentecostal Church of Santa Cruz picks up the phone, and they're like, Pastor Mike Fisher. I said, hey, man, I don't mean to bug you or anything, but I really need some groceries because I'm stuck out here telling my story. And they weren't going to help me. They're like, well, we don't really do that. I'm like, listen, man. I was like, you don't understand. I really need this. He says, I'll tell you what. He's like, we have service in 20 minutes. He's like, if you want to come down, he's like, if you sit through a service, he's like, we'll help you out. I said, okay. So I show up. God is good, man. Right around the corner is this church that I'm supposed to go to, Eric Circle, up just down Pelton Street, just down the road. So I walk down there. I get there. Doors are locked. Nobody's there. I'm like, okay, so I'm lost now, and I have no more time on my phone. Walk to the store. I ask the lady about the address, and she's like, yeah, that's the church. She's like, go back. The doors will be open. I'm like, it's a pretty bold statement. So I get there, and the doors are wide open. I'm like, all right, cool. I walk in, and I'd never been treated like that in years, in a good long time. I hadn't showered probably in like 6 days. I just got off the Greyhound bus. And these people are walking up hugging me like they've known me their entire lives, and it was really weird. I had gotten kind of like against people just because, I mean, a lot of the times being homeless, people tend to have this predetermined outlook of what you're all about and what you're going to do. Basically, we're just these drunken, violent people that, you know, we're not good to be around, and we do things that are not necessarily appropriate for society. That's not really the case, though, in a lot of the times. But so they gave me these hugs. They gave me a box of food after service. I went to the altar after because they did an altar call. Had like 15 people pray for me. And then service ended, and the pastor's son come up to me, and he's like, hey, man. He's like, we're going for burgers. He's like, you want to come with me? I'm like, no, dude. I'm like, I reek, bro. I'm not getting in your car. He's like, don't worry about it, man. He's like, come on, I got you. So I get in his car. He's got this nice Benz. Like, I used to live in a little Ford Ranger. So he's like, he got this Benz. I'm like telling him I would live in his car. And he kind of laughed at me. He thought I was kidding. And he's like, so you got a job, man? I was like, no, I don't have a job. He's like, do you want one? I said, yeah, of course I want a job. He says, all right, you start Monday. He's like, you're an apprentice electrician now. I was like, okay. He was like, you know, I don't know nothing about electrical work. He's like, that's fine. You'll learn. So they kind of just took me into their family, man. And it was really cool. I had about 2 months of of sobriety. I was doing really well. I was still homeless. I was getting up. I lived in a tent in on West Cliff. There's a lighthouse park over in Santa Cruz. I lived in there. But I got up every morning and went to work and did like normal people stuff. I just happened to live in a tent. And then I messed up and I had relapsed. And I went on a 5-day run. And I was like, you know, I found God. I've come to understand God as my higher power. But I still ended up getting high and messing up. And I couldn't understand why. So they asked me if I wanted to go to rehab, and I said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm cool on that. And so I slept it off, and I woke up in the morning, and they're like, all right, so you want to go to rehab? I'm like, if you can find me a Christian program, I'm like, I'll go. And so they found City Team. I didn't know it was a year program. I knew nothing about City Team. We just rolled up at like 8:30 in the morning. And Mr. Knuckles didn't get there till about 9 o'clock. He walks in his office. People have to wait in the mission for weeks sometimes to get in. I sat there in about 25 minutes, and Mr. Knuckles had already spoken to me, said, do you want to change your, I'll never forget, do you want to change your life, soldier? Yeah, I'm cool on this. I need to understand what's wrong with me. He said, class starts in 5 minutes, just down the hall. And that's how I came to City Team, and that's how I've progressed over the last little bit.
Thanks so much. Both of you, thanks so much for, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Not only does Jamal have a bright future, and Ewing has a bright future. He's very intelligent and very talented, and one of the hardworking and most honest people. It's hard to imagine someone being honest when they lived in such a life of turmoil and sin, but he's an honest guy, really great. One of my old mentors, his name is Dr. Miles Monroe, he made a statement that's so haunting. And he said, the richest place in the world is the graveyard, where lies unfulfilled potential and unrealized dreams. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that don't make it, go to the graveyard, and they have these amazing potentials and wonderful dreams and never get them fulfilled. And I just think that that's a crime.
Oh. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So a question that when I was thinking about, and the team was thinking about this night and bringing all of you here, one of the questions that were driving us is how would you encourage us in this room to respond to when we see people experiencing homelessness. I know that we see people, you know, on the side of draggers or Trader Joe's and asking for money. And Charles, I know we talked a while about that. How should we respond? I know for me, I've been working with missions for a while, and I honestly still feel uncomfortable when I walk by someone who's in a state of homelessness, and I feel, what do? Do I give money? Do I give food? Do I talk? I'm 5 minutes late to a meeting, and I just have a lot of emotions and anxieties that I feel, and I would love for you to just speak into that and help us out. Help me out.
Sure. One of the biggest things you could do is make eye contact. Mm. You know, let them know I see you. So a lot of people have struggled over give money or not give money because we know that most of us that were homeless were also addicted, you know. We were addicted because of the pain of reality. We could not face the pain of reality. A lot of people profit out of our pain. So if you, like a big percentage of people will take the money and give it to a drug dealer and buy drugs. If they do that, then that will support a gang. And the gang will support a supplier, which will probably be attached to a terrorist organization. So giving money is actually funding a bad thing, and it's also hurting their body. So educating yourself on what works and what doesn't work is very important. City Team works. you know, in places like City Teen Works. So, like, if you can get convinced them, as you make eye contact, as you greet them, as you talk to them as a human being, and I think both Ewing and Jamal demonstrated this well, you might not be able to get them to receive help from an organization the first time, but once they know that you see them and that you care, they will probably listen with a different kind of ear. Maybe there's some weight to this truth that he's telling me. Maybe I do need help. Maybe he will know or she will know where I can go, and they will go and get help. But if they don't get help and they simply just get money, then that will perpetuate their situation. Mm-hmm. There will never be a change because nothing brought change to me like the fact that someone cared. Mm. Because we are so convinced that no one cares. We're so convinced that we're subhuman. Mm. We're so convinced that even God doesn't love us because we're so filthy and dirty and undesirable that when we're surprised by the grace of eye contact or a human touch, you know, when we get surprised by that, it changes everything.
Wow. I remember talking with you, Charles, a while back, and I was saying, well, okay, so I understand that when we give money, that is not helping City Team, that it could be perpetuating a lifestyle or helping perpetuate a lifestyle. And we were talking about just how, you know, there's still a small percentage of people who actually do need the money, who are living in a state of homelessness outside of drugs and alcohol, and that when we make eye contact and talk to people, hey, there's organizations like City Team that would love to help you out. And there's organizations that we partner with all throughout the Bay Area that are ready and welcome and would love for us to connect people experiencing homelessness. And next week we're gonna have a little cards that if you wanna give to people that say City Team, you can grab them and give them to people. But something that's really interesting that all three of you were saying was just the reality of sharing love and dignity. And how powerful that is, and for me, and we have a couple minutes. Time's like really flying by. I want to get to the questions soon, but it's just a couple more minutes. What's interesting is that for me, it's easy to give money because then I feel good about myself, even though that's not perhaps the best thing. And I like, well, I did my duty. But what happens there is there's a barrier that I'm not engaging in a relationship with. And the challenging thing when I hear you say, hey, it's not about the money, it's about the relationship, it's about dignity, it's about getting to know someone, that requires a lot of me. And that's hard. I have to deal with my own fear and my anxiety around that. So thanks for sharing that. It's really important here. We have a few more minutes, but I wanted to ask, just kind of in light of that, to both Jamal and Ewan, when you guys just found yourself in a state of homelessness, what were things that you wanted people to do when they passed, and what were things that you needed them to do? Like, you know, what did you want? And it's, yeah.
For me, it was very, when Mr. Knuckles was talking about it, eye contact and saying hello is a big, big thing, you know, because there was this one time I was in front of McDonald's and I had a significant other at the time, and I couldn't find her anywhere. I was looking for her. I remember calling her on her phone, and I was running. I was right at this McDonald's, like, really, really early in the morning, and I was like, she's going to come around, and I'm pacing back and forth, but I'm in a real angry mode. I'm going to be violent, you know, and I was really, really angry. Anybody that came at me, I was ready to, you know, I'm going to jump on them. And there was this guy, he was in a drive-thru, and he gave me some real hard eye contact, and he just looked at me, and I was mugging him. I'm just like, well, what are you looking at? You know what I'm saying? What are you looking at? And he just looked at me, and he's like, okay. And then he went back around. And then I seen him, he's driving slow. He looked at me again. I was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to jump in this guy's car or take his car or something. I don't know. This guy's he's looking at me crazy. He gets out, and he says, hey, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah. yeah, I'm okay. He's all, I said, what's up with you? And he's like, yeah, well, you know, I just wanted to know if you wanted to get something to eat. And I was like, yeah, you know, get something to eat. Give me some money. He's like, no. You could come inside with me and I'll get you something to eat. And the anger, that violence that was inside of me was drawn down to like a real, real low. And I was hungry. And I didn't think she was gonna come around, so I was like, okay. We went in there and ordered some big breakfast. He sat me down. He didn't really, I could tell that he probably was a man of God, because only a man of God that I know now would stop and see, you know, anger in somebody and something that is not meant for us to be like, and want to stop over and give like a helping word and a word of encouragement or love. Sent me in there and we talked a little bit. He asked me about, you know, what am I doing with my life and everything like that. We talked briefly and I kind of was like, I need to just eat something, and, you know. But those are the things, like I want to just say, when you plant a seed and you give somebody some hope, it's a lot better than just giving them some money in their hand.
Well, for me, what I wanted people to do was exactly the opposite. I could care less if you talk to me. I really wasn't a fan of people. Up on the East Coast, I don't know if it happens so much here, but there are groups of people and they kidnap homeless straight up. Or you'll get a group of people and they'll just start whooping on you because you're homeless. I got beat up one time because this drunk group of people had walked out of a bar and I was posted up in a little alcove in between a couple of buildings. And they took the time after they passed me to walk back and just whoop on me when I was like laying down with a blanket over my head. And I woke up and my face was all busted up and I was just like, whoa, I didn't even know what happened. And they threw a beer bottle at me and missed and broke it all in my area. So I had to pick up and move. My face was all busted up and I was just like, you know what? All right, cool. From that moment on, I didn't trust people. I didn't like people. I mean, the closest interaction that I had to people was, I mean, if you're going to come up and give me stuff, that's cool. Or like my drug dealer, I get close enough to him just to take his stuff and run. But I didn't have contact with people very well. And the little bit of contact I did have was super unhealthy. I wanted your money. I didn't want you. I didn't want your food. I didn't want anything like that. I did have this lady one time. She stopped by and she gave me. It seems super insignificant, but she gave me a pack of socks because I was rolling around with like absolute. She had obviously seen me up and around town a couple of times, but I never wore socks. I'm like a caveman and I don't wear socks. And she bought me this pack of socks and I kind of laughed at her. I was like, I was about ready to tell you, no, I don't wear socks. And I was going to give them back to her. And I was like, you know what? I was like, thank you. And she's like, don't worry about it. Hands me a $20 bill. I was like, oh, all right, cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. But I hadn't talked to somebody in such a long time that it came out. She was super scared. Like, she did not know what to do with me. She just, like, stayed from, like, me to that chair away from me and just kind of like, here, just take it and go. So, yeah, but as far as talking to me, like, from my situation, I didn't want to talk. I didn't want anything to do with anybody. I secluded. I'm an isolator. I stay away from people. I just keep to myself because, if you hang out with a big group of people, especially homeless encampment people, you're liable to get in trouble real quick. So I stuck to myself.
And I think that's interesting how everyone's different, but also there was an act of selflessness or someone to still break through, even though you didn't want it. I mean, from listening, there was just a sense of, but I still needed love.
Yeah.
So we're running a little bit late on time. We have time for a couple questions. Yeah, thanks, Anna. So, and since we're running a little short on time, if you guys want to know more and learn more, like, we literally just went over two of the 15 questions that I had. But the good thing is if you go to menlo.church, which is great, if you go to menlo.church/sank and go to local serving, City Team's the first partner to serve with, you can go talk to them any day. They're there in San Jose. So if you have more questions, go on over there. But so First question, Charles. It says, Mr. Knuckles, does your recommendation on to give money versus support change when the person asking for money has kids with them?
That's tough because I've seen people with kids really addicted to. So that's a tough situation. I probably would give them the money. I remember we were out, and like I never give money, but we were out with the guys, and this lady said, I need money for a bus, and I gave her the money, and they were like, Mr. Knuckles, she didn't give that money for a bus. She went and got an ice cream. I said, yeah, but it wasn't drugs. So I brought, you remember that day? So I probably would give someone money with kids. But ultimately, money always perpetuates the problem. It is a it's instant gratification for a long-term problem. The best thing you can do is connect that person with a professional. We are professionals at City Team. Try to direct them to City Team or a professional organization like City Team that can change their whole situation, you know. We have 100% success rate at getting people jobs. Everybody goes to work. We get people housing. We case manage them, whether it's for a day or whether it's for a year. But we're able to successfully change their situation instead of perpetuating it.
Real quick, how can we volunteer at City Team?
So cityteam.org is a volunteer tab, and push the one for San Jose, and it will have some open slots. Or you can just call me, and I can get you in there. And there's a lot of things to volunteer to do at City Team.
One more question, because of time. What is the most untrue, and anyone can speak into this, what is the most untrue stereotype of homelessness that you have experienced? The most untrue.
For me, I would say the fact that we, that everybody's aggressive and that we're these horrible, horrible people that we just, you know, we don't care about society. We don't care about working. We just want to be lazy and do drugs and stay in the cut in the woods or do whatever we do. That's really not the case. There's a lot of homeless people that are actually super, super intelligent people, or they've had amazing careers. For example, there was this gentleman who was, he was a multimillionaire. He had a company. His wife divorced him. He lost everything. And guess what? He became homeless. Was he crazy, aggressive, alcoholic dude? No, he wasn't. He was perfectly normal, minus the fact that he no longer had the material possessions that once made him a normal member of society. I mean, it's... situations never change. It's just your outlook on it. And that man, like, he had things taken away from him, but he's still the same man, you know? And that's the way it is. And that's something that really frustrates me because, like I said earlier, people have this thought in their head. They see a homeless person, and it's just like, you know, that dude's gross, you know? Like, keep your distance, blah, blah, blah. You miss me with all that stuff. I don't approve of that at all. Just maybe it's because I live that life, you know what I mean? But yeah, that would be the big one for me.
Anyone else want to speak into that? I mean, that was great.
What's the biggest untrue fact? I think maybe that just all homeless people are using drugs and that they're all just want to just get your money to, you know, use alcohol or buy any type of drug they need. There's a lot of people, like I know when I lived in the jungle, largest encampment in San Jose, there's a lot of people that were good people over there, but they had a lot of mental problems too, a lot of mental issues, you know. There used to be a large mental facility here, Agnew's Church in the area, Bay Area. It's not available anymore, so a lot of them that were living there move to that encampment. You know, a lot of people, they have anxiety. They can't even come out and stay and talk to anybody in the, so we used to call it the upper room, the upper world or whatever we'll have it. So that's one of the biggest thing that we're all just, you know, using drugs and alcohol. Some people just really have some real mental issues going on.
Charles, you or any last thoughts?
I totally agree. Homeless people have to work hard to survive homeless. If they can be trained how to redirect that energy and be trained to work jobs that will sustain them, they end up becoming the best employees. When we get a guy a job after he's been at City Team, the employee always say, "Do you have any more? I need some more workers." These guys work hard, they're loyal, they're true. They take care of each other. Mm. You know, they have deep loyalties, and they're human beings just like anyone else. You know, yeah. I'm saying they, when it was me too. You know, we're human beings just like anyone else.
Created in the image of God. Yeah. Charles, is there any last thoughts that you would like to share with us before we continue our worship service?
Yeah, the main thought is like, City Team is only supported by the body of Christ. We don't receive any government funding because we're a Christian organization. And the government has offered us money, but in order for the government to come in, they would have to kick Jesus out. And Jesus is the working secret of our success. Mm-hmm. And so we don't get any government funding. So we need people we need the body of Christ to support us, to come down and volunteer, to give us funding, because without money we don't go. And also, we are highly professional. If you have a situation with someone that's homeless or addicted, contact us. We would love to get involved. We are tireless when it comes to homelessness and addiction. We work night and day. My staff is amazing. They don't get paid much, none of us do, but we work these amazing hours because we love people like Jamal and UN, and we see the potential. When you rescue a homeless person, when you rescue an addict, you rescue a family, your entire family. And many families are touched by these conditions, and they need rescuing. So make a movement in the name of Christ and support City Team.
Thanks, Charles. Can we give him a hand? All right. I would love to pray for you guys. And, thanks so much for being here. Join me in prayer, please. Jesus, thank you so much for Charles and his friends, for Jamal, for you. And God, I pray that you continue to bless City Team, Lord, that you continue to bless all of the organizations that are working tirelessly in the Bay Area and the world, helping solve the issue of homelessness, God. Reading a study, it shows that from 2007 to now, homelessness is decreasing nationally, slowly. And in California, we're struggling to decrease. And this is a huge issue, Jesus. And I pray that you continue to mobilize your people to help. Show us how we can give dignity. Show us how we can give love. And I pray that you be with us, Jesus. And thank you so much for creating everyone in your image, that we are truly better together. We love you, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.